It all started so promisingly. Wire and 2020. We were COVID-free and had signed a second marquee player. But as the stadium turnstiles ran dry and the world turned on its head, you could say the season didn't quite go to plan. Sure, the podcast had record downloads as we hit the top of the charts, but for Price and his inarticulate press conferences, confidence started to fade. Carl Fitzpatrick had said in 2019 the season had been unacceptable. Would the pandemic save our coach from being shown the door? But without any rugby, the show went on. Over the next 19 weeks, there were old coaches interviewed, current coaches reviewed. We had cucumber sandwiches with JC. The BBC even joined in. We had rugby league journalists. And just when we thought it couldn't possibly get any better, oh yes, what a scoop, a certain Greg Inglis dropped in. So as we went back to playing in empty stadiums, would Price prove to be a tactical genius or just a bit of a dick? Widdop's missus packed her bags. You cannot blame her. They were living in Halifax. Anthony Gelling awaited the courts. Guilty or not guilty, did his metaphorical handcuffs ever really fit in? There was Chris Hill, Captain Fantastic, or Captain Penalty Machine, as Price refused to make use of his entire bench. Blake Austin, our marquee chocolate bar, had a flaky year. But there was always the brilliant Mike Cooper, a local lad through and through, or Darryl Clark. But could we keep the NRL agents, vultures, at bay? Ben Murdoch Masilla flew to warmer climes of spells of 12 minutes. And Leilani Latu joined Wire's overseas signing forwards, Flop's Hall of Fame. Tony Tatupu, Craig Teitzel, the Jackson brothers, remember them? It's a prestigious list. But hey, we're back again. Rested, refreshed, recuperated. The vaccinations will inject fans back to their seats. GI will be a welcome alternative to five drives and a kick to the corner for Toby King. The Ratchford and Ashton fullback debate will marvellously go on and on and on. Okay, I know, we still haven't signed a decent prop. There'll be plenty of content on the show, more incompetent reviews, there's no more tackle bags, fingers crossed, plenty more statistics if Sam pulls his finger out. There'll be dogs barking in the background, microwaves pinging, and probably more mild male 1970s sexism. Yes, I know, we're not perfect, and we can take the piss. But really, have you seen the players' Instagrams? Some of them are a right bunch of cunts.
Here is Austin. Austin onto Widdop. Widdop, nice ball. Gelling this time, no mistake.
Widdop. Widdop. Looks good to ball. It's a really nice kick. And Ben Curry is on the end of it.
Austin over the top and Charnley for the corner.
Gareth Widdop with the step. Gareth Widdop with the try. And Warrington with the perfect start to the second half.
Ben Curry is going to go in under the sticks. Virtually length of the field try. His coach applauds.
Here's Patton. Oh, lovely pass from Deck Patton. We knew he could make it, and who was there but Josh Hewlett?
Cooper driving towards the post and still going and getting the try.
This is Gelling straightens up, flicks away, Charlie's in, back in a minute,
he's in.
Wow,
try this.
Anthony Gelling, brilliant there.
Mamo cuts back infield, he's got support, he ain't going to need it. What a great try. Here is Austin, Austin will get one, Austin will get the try he deserves.
Chance here for Curry, he's got support.
Oh!
Hello, 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 welcome. Yes, we are back here for season three of the podcast. I'm Rob London, here at the helm of our bizarre little rugby league dictatorship. So talking of which, where are my two podcasting dictators? Firstly, introducing a man who's crunched the numbers on our podcasting youth that swear allegiance to his statistical salute with his appropriate initials of SS, our very own Desert Factual Fox. Yes, it's Sam General Caveat Sankey.
Hello, yes, hi, and nice to see you all, and ready for another season.
And also, it wouldn't be the same without this old lad, a fella that's changed sides on this podcast more times than Mussolini did during the war. And no doubt, one day, his Brian Bevan resistance fighters will string him up by his own tackle bags. It's Dennis Despot Waywell!
All right.
Ah, well, I tell you what, boys, it's good to be back, isn't it, to see you two beautiful gentlemen back in the room. I'll start with you very quickly, Sam. This is going to be a long one tonight, so strap in. I've looked at the script and it's going to go for about 4.5 hours, so I hope you've got nothing on tomorrow morning. Quick word from you, Sam. What are you drinking? How's your pre-season podcast been?
I am drinking a Chianti tonight. Just opened it. We had a little bit of gin earlier on, and then we've had some Chinese takeaway and now some Chianti for 4 hours. Might need two bottles.
Dennis, how's your pre-season been, mate?
Well, I've been pretty turned off, really, up until the point when the big news came out the other week, and then all of a sudden I started getting interested again. So I'm quite happy. I'm really looking forward to the positivity of this first podcast. It looks as though it's going to be quite a good one. How are you, Rob? How are you doing?
Well, you might remember last year when we came into the podcast, I'd just been under the surgeon's knife because I'd played state-level tiddlywinks for 30 years. And I said that you two guys had to sort of, you know, see me through season two of the podcast, which you did brilliantly. So this year I'm going to up my game, lads. This year I'm going to give it my all. I'm going to be a lot more positive because that nerve on my back was really pushing against my anxieties. So I think we'll be fine this year, boys, and I'm really looking forward to it. Talking of which, at the start of the podcast, I did mention the word dictators about you both, and I want to apologise about that because I think what we really need is a team bonding exercise just to get us all in the mood for the year, just to make sure that we're all on the same page. So I thought about it, and I thought what we could do is probably come up with a rugby league team of dictators. So here it is, and I apologise for the pronunciations. Number one, Saddam Hussein. On the wings, Kim Jong-un and Robert Mugabe. In the centres, Mao Zedong and Osama bin Laden. At six, Joseph Stalin. Seven, Adolf Hitler. In the pack, we have Idi Amin and Mohammed al-Gaddafi in the front row. Vladimir Putin at hooker. In the second row, Henry VIII and Bashir al-Assad. And at 13, Fidel Castro.
You're missing Pol Pot, aren't you, I suppose?
Well, hang on, Sam. Hang on. I've got an interchange bench. I'll bring me interchange bench up. Interchange bench is Pol Pot, Vlad the Impaler, Genghis Khan, and Ellis Robson. So we've finished that off nicely.
Yeah, but I can really understand what you're doing here. History is important, and we shouldn't forget that, you know, there's been a lot of bad people in the past and stuff. But we really did turn up for the Warrington Wolves podcast tonight.
Vaccination jabs carry on across the UK, Super League headquarters gets in on the act as one little prick leaves their office. Steve Price enrolls for an English language degree, endeavouring to focus on past and present tense. In a statement, Steve said, "I've came to college to get a better grasp in what I could did for the players group." And with no sign of that European vacation in sight, Professor Broomhead opts for a British holiday, with the bed and breakfast industry rebranding itself as the King Bed, Breakfast, Morning Tea, Brunch, Lunch, Afternoon Tea, High Tea, Dinner, Evening Meal, Supper, Late Night Snack Association.
Ah, dear. Right, well, we've heard the headlines to the news there. Let's move on to the news stories. What we're looking at here, boys, is pretty much what's happened this year between Warrington playing their last game and coming back to play in season 2021. I'll run through a fair few of them, but we won't stop on all of them, lads, because clearly we're going to speak about quite a few of the squad when it comes to the looking at the squad. But back on the 23rd of November, Sam, Wire signed three players. Ben Curry, aged 26, he signed a three-year deal. Matt Davis, 24, signs a two-year deal. And Jason Clark, 31, signs a one-year deal. Are you happy with those three on those signings?
Very happy. And obviously, you know, I am a big Ben Curry fan. I think you're on my side. On the assumption we've paid the right money for him, he might never quite get that pace back. But let's face it, if he was on the open market, Wigan and Leeds would be sniffing around wanting to snap him up. Maybe not Saints, because they've got a particularly strong pack. But delighted we've got him at 26, in the prime of his career, 3 years, perfect. Matty Davis, he's 24, he brings energy. You assume he's not on a huge amount of money. And Jason Clark is obviously on a he's a decent player, but he's also the best buddy of our new recruit. Yes.
Do you think that's really his main sort of criteria now, is to look after Greg English?
No, I don't think so. We talked before. He's a good player. I don't think he's better than good. He's just a good workhorse player who's a good team man. Mm. So happy with him. Very happy with him.
I watched back the Warrington versus Hull game after work the other day, and I was
Is
amazed.
This when you phoned me when you were depressed?
Yeah, I had to turn it. Admittedly, I did turn it off after 25 minutes. But the first 25 minutes, he was actually probably the most prominent forward we had on the field. I was quite surprised. He took the ball up on quite a few occasions, made good yards, and then got a really quick play of the ball. I was quite impressed. It almost, to me, struck me as if it had been his best game for Warrington in that sort of 25-minute spell. I didn't remember any of that. So we'll wait and see. Well, joining him in the pack this year, on the 24th of November, we sign, and this is no secret because this was sort of crept out last year at some point, but we signed Rob Butler on a two-year contract. We don't really know that much about him. He was the only player out of the Championship that Shane Warne picked in his last squad. I mean, have you seen anything of him, boys, at all?
No. He played in 2019. He did play 24 Super League games when London were up. But let's be fair, he was only 20 years old at that stage. So I don't remember him doing anything spectacular. However, you look at his age. He's a perfect age, isn't he, for potential. That's what we've bought there, potential. Yeah. 22-year-old up-and-coming pro.
I like the fact that Sean Wayne. Jesus Christ. It's three people.
You better start getting that one right. People.
Well, he doesn't normally bowl a googly, does he? So I think if he's picked him in the squad, then you'd think that he's seen something in him that he likes. So wait and see.
No. What do you think? Do you think we're likely to get the crowds back? They announced this week that the limit was going to be 5,000 in the stadium. Do you think we'll ever get back to full crowds in the stadium this year?
It'll be 4,000, it'll be. No. On the first. If things go to plan in the country, it'll be 4,000 to begin with. I'm feeling... Maybe it's Rob giving me a bit. I'm feeling quite positive. I'm not sure we'll get back to full crowds, Dennis. I think there will be some sort of limitation, but it would be nice to see a crowd. And if we get to the second stage at least, maybe we'll get to 50% capacity.
And do you think that crowd will be shouting sort of, "Well done, Steve," or like, you know, "Why have we lost a few games, Steve?" When, you know, will they be very vocal, do you think, in terms of how we're doing?
If you're asking a serious question, I think there'll be an awful lot of support. I think there'll be an awful lot of support for both the team and for Steve Price. I said on our last one, he's not loved, but he's got a lot of respect, and I think everybody would like to see him go out well. And I think everyone will get behind him.
Well, we'll move on to Steve Price in the squad in a little bit. So we'll move on to the 30th of November. Anthony Gelling parts company with Warrington by mutual consent. I think We were all a bit, we were happy to see him go, weren't we, Dennis? I never took to him. I don't take to Wigan players, especially ones that are a bit of a bell end.
Christ, have you had a look at our player roster? don't like Wigan players. No, he was a bit of a, he was a divisive player, wasn't he? Let's be honest. I think ever since he did the handcuff thing, that really turned you off, didn't it?
Yes.
I think, you know,
just
it
was so derogatory
really
towards
thing.
Women, whether it was right or wrong. It was just silly thing to do.
Yeah.
1st of December, Warrington's new kit is leaked online with Greg Inglis posting an Instagram picture wearing the kit in a photo shoot. Now, Sam, you've pretty much got every single kit going back to probably Vladivar or Spartamatic. What are you making of it, mate? Do you like it?
Yes, I do, actually. I do. I may be one of the few people who likes a lot of yellow, or should we say primrose, but it's described as yellow in all the press. I wish they knew the history of rugby league. And from what I understand, the home kit is meant to evoke the kit that we wore when we were at Wembley and got sadly stuffed by Wigan. And the away kit is evoking the Jonathan Davies era, which I've got that one upstairs somewhere. I'll wear that. First away game, I'll wear that for you. The green and white stripes.
I'll have to find the music from the clothes show. Was it Selena Scott that used to present that?
Somewhere yes,
that, and
yes.
That other
yes.
bloke, who didn't he do the...
Or maybe, what were them two who did what
Trini
not
and
to wear?
Susanna.
Maybe do that one. That's yeah. it. Yeah, that can be both.
Gee, that's what it's come to. Episode one, we're discussing Trini and Sudan at the 23rd, the desert in
no,
Sudan.
We've done the dictators, let's not go back there.
2nd of December, England Rugby Union coach Eddie Jones announced that Steve Price would join his squad in training ahead of England playing France in the Autumn Nations Cup. This move by Jones came after there was criticism towards Rugby Union's style and its current lack of entertainment. Price was drafted in to focus on attack. Now, come on, let's be positive. Come on, keep it up.
Oh, dear. What do you think he did then? Did he make a difference? I didn't watch the Rugby Union games.
I was expecting him to kick across to the corner for, you know, a big high kick. I was itching for it to happen, but it didn't. I didn't watch it, mate. I don't watch Union, so Sam's probably the person to go to on this. I think they lost, didn't they? Didn't actually win. On the 10th of December, Wolves sign Hulk AR prop Robbie Mulhern on a 2-year deal. The second rower swapped with Lewis Johnson, who went the other way to Hulk AR on a 1-year contract. Now, there's a new podcast out there, boys, which is the Red Robin podcast. It's the Hulk AR podcast. And I was sort of involved a little bit in that in terms of them setting it up. They rang for advice just to see how you go about this. And so I had a chat to them about that because it was...
What not to do.
Yeah, so...
Did you give them the dictator's advert idea?
Said, you can have that, lads. You can have, from us, you can have the dictators for episode one.
Very good.
They were very positive about Hulk AR. They can see clearly that they're going to struggle. But they were quite happy with the swap, which worried me a little bit because we haven't seen much of Lewis Johnson. But they hadn't seen anything really of Robbie Mulhern at Hull KR. I think his better days were at Leeds, Sam.
No, I'm not sure about that. He burst on to the... He had a particularly good 2019 at Hull KR, but we didn't see any much of him last year. Again... I suppose it's who you're comparing with. I liked Lewis Johnson. I saw a bit of something in him, but obviously Steve Price doesn't. But really, and I know we're going to do the squad later, but we've swapped in Mulhern and Butler, and we've let go Latu, Gelling and Burrell.
Yeah.
I'm happier with that. I'm happy with that.
I agree. I think it's definitely a good swap. One player that did go is on the 18th of December. We let Keenan Brand go over on a year's loan to Lee. He was sort of the one we criticised a little bit last year when it came to that game when all the young kids played and he jumped out of the line at Leeds.
Yeah,
I think it'll do him good to go to Lee.
But let's be honest, there was always too much pressure of because he's got such a short amount of time and exposure in that first team. So maybe this is a good idea. It, you know, he might, you know, really test him out, give him a chance to actually prove a point. And, you know, based on what he does there, then you can sort of be as harsh as you like, can't you? If he's going to be a Super League player, then we should see it in his loan, I suppose.
So another good move. One player I don't think we'll see again is Sammy Kabula. He becomes the latest player to go out on loan from Wyatt on the 20th of December. The 21-year-old prop heads to Newcastle Thunder for the entire season. I don't think we'll be seeing him again, will we, Sam? I think that'll be it, won't it, for Kabula?
Hang on, why are you saying that? Is that because it's Newcastle's further away? Is that what you're basing that on?
I just don't... you know, this sort of falls in line with what I'm saying about Sean Wayne. And that's that. I think he just gets it right. And they let him go at Wigan. You know, they didn't see anything in Wigan. And when Wigan let players go, I always think that's the telltale sign that you shouldn't be signing them. I can think of very few Wigan players. There have been the odd occasion where Wigan players have left and gone on to play very well at other clubs, but to me that was a red flag, and I didn't see anything
like
in him
Gelling,
last year.
Gelling, Charnley, Hughes.
Yeah. I mean, Charlie's a little bit different because he went to Sale, but it's just... I mean, Hughes is another one. Hughes, sorry to say, couldn't get in that Wigan pack, you know, at the time. So there's a pattern here. I just don't think we'll see Kabula again.
I think it is a little bit different when you look at someone like Hughes. When you're 18, 19, you make the decision, there's two internationals in front of me. Do I hang around until I'm 23, 24, or do I go somewhere else? So there is that. I appreciate if you're a world beater, you're going to get in at whatever age, but you can be a good player and have a couple of internationals in front of you. Do you sit and warm the bench, or do you go off and make your fortune elsewhere?
I just think when it comes to Wigan do their due diligence. And I think you always need to put that into the conversation when you're signing players from Wigan that Wigan are letting go. But I think you're great in what you've said, yeah.
I agree, Rob, but with Kabula, he was nowhere near their first team.
Well, why are we signing him then?
Well, supposedly he was there for reserves and to see whether... But of course, the reserves got pulled, didn't they, because of COVID. So I think you're right. I think the fact that he's gone to Newcastle, you look at Keenan Brand... He's gone, albeit to the team that's expected to finish bottom, he's gone to a Super League team. Kabula's not, you know. So that says what perhaps people think might happen in their careers.
Yeah, okay. Well, on the 7th of January, I'm just going to break away, Dennis, for a second from Warrington. Ben Thaler pleads guilty in court to driving without a licence.
You know, I completely missed this in the news. I didn't see anything about it whatsoever.
Insurance. Driving without insurance.
Driving without insurance. My goodness. Well, I've got nothing to say on it, but apart from that, he shouldn't be breaking the rules. Will it come back and haunt him? And will, if the crowds are back, be reminding him about that insurance infringement?
Well, I'm sure he'll be insured of a good response when he ends up at the Halliwell, Joan. But we'll... Can we just have a moment for Ben Thaler, please, and not having insurance? Okay, moving on. 7th of January, Deck Patton's contract expires at Warrington and it will not be renewed. A few weeks later, he signs for Salford. Deck played over 100 games for Wyre, averaging a try every 540 minutes or scoring a point every 1,463 seconds, 0.41. In comparison, Blake Austin scores a point at Warrington every 1,531 seconds, 0.91, which makes actually Deck Patton scoring a point 68.5 seconds quicker than Blake Austin does. Boom!
Get in there. I mean, I did read that Deck Patton, he was a bit concerned that he was, you know, going to have to stack shelves at Asda if he didn't get a Super League contract.
He's a Waitrose but stacker.
No, it was Asda, but he did go for the interview, but apparently that he needed 10 days, really, to prove himself and They didn't want to take the chance.
Yeah, that's true. Sam, we think, I spoke to Dennis in the week about this, I have a funny feeling that Deck Pattern might be quite high up in the Man of Steel points going to Salford. You know, going to one of the... Well, it's a bit like Cesar. He goes to a team where he's not surrounded by that many good people. If Salford start winning and get on a bit of a roll, it'll be the pattern kick, it'll be the little stutter pass. I have a funny feeling he might be up there in the top five of Man of Steel early on this year.
I have a funny feeling he won't.
Oh, yeah, you know what? If nothing else is give the podcast, it's took a big hole in the podcast sort of material. You know, we've had to really work hard in the off-season to fill the hole that Deck Pattern's left. And as Rob said, you know what? Actually, as a backup and under a different coach, I wonder whether we would have got more out of Deck Pattern. And I agree with Rob. I think that when you're in a team like with a number of different players, he's got a chance of shining. And don't forget, he's going to partner, is he not, Kevin Brown?
I think he threw the best two passes of the year. I think the pass he threw to Thulis when Thulis scored and the pass he threw to Curry
Ashton latched
onto was superb.
Oh, well done.
We had Brad. Tony Barrow on the podcast at Christmas and Tony said all Deck needs is an arm round his shoulder, be told what to do and he'd be a belting little scrum half. So... Or standoff, whatever you want.
You know, I can't fuck you up now, can I, when you're saying Thulis like that? You've been practicing that for about 3 months. Try to put
it. It's harder to say when you put the Josh in front of it. Oh. See, in front of it. I thought I was going to say Josh Thulis then, and I went Thrunt.
Very good. Excellent.
I said Thrunt. Thrunt.
I know, yeah.
That's what I say.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll perhaps just go back to what you were saying about Wigan letting people go. I have some time for Deck Pattern. He's a decent lad, tried hard, but he's played 100 games, or he's been involved in 100 games. Plenty of time to show us that he was top-notch. For me, he's not top-notch. He's all right. He's a decent player. He works hard, but he's not top-notch.
Well, let's cut that bit then.
Yeah, take that out now. We're all recording on three different tracks tonight. We've actually upgraded. Now we've got the Watt Bevan recording studio. Yes. We can just wipe out most of Sam, can't we? When
Can I go and get a drink if I'm going to be cut from this bit?
You go and get a drink, Sam, and I'll speak to Dennis about the next player.
Fantastic. Who is it? Let me see.
Happy guess.
Who is it? Oh, hang on. No.
Oh, he's back. Who is it?
It's
Joe Philbin. On the 24th of January, he signed an extended 3-year contract, which keeps the 26-year-old at Wyatt until the end of the 2024 season. I'll start on this one and say that having watched that Warrington Hull game where he comes on as the main prop due to the fact that Mike Cooper's out, I thought he was belting, Dennis. I think we've got a real find here. We can't let Philbin go. I think he thoroughly deserves, out of all the players we've mentioned, the contract more than any of the other ones.
I remember when we signed Hill from Lee, and we built around him, and I feel like this is the same thing now with Philbin, is that he is the prop that you build the rest of your pack round for the next few years. I think you're right. You know, you can't get a more fulfilling player than Greg Inglis. So that's enough about Greg Inglis anyway.
Yeah, that's enough about it. Yeah. Oh, hello, Sam, you're back. There he is. 9th of February, we'll just briefly touch on this, and that's Robert Elston announces he's set to stand down as executive chairman of Super League after tendering his resignation. He leaves 4 weeks later. On the 10th of February, Warrington prop release Leilani Latu with immediate effect. This is a tricky one, isn't it? Was he ever really given a chance, Dennis? Did we ever see the best of Leilani Latu?
This is a tough one. I mean, he came over. He was seen as a prop that was going to offer us something else other than the Cooper Hill partnership. He didn't ever get into the side. I think a lot of these players where it hasn't worked out, we've got to put an air of a caveat really, because is it the fact that it was the coaching and the coach's decisions that led to him not actually coming through to sort of show their, true form and stuff? Or is it that he was shit? And I'll put that to Sam. What do you say?
I wouldn't be quite as harsh as to phrase it quite that black and white, but he was, at the end of the day, if you are selling yourself or your agent is selling you as an NRL prop, that suggests a certain standard and a certain quality. And I didn't see that. He had weeks and weeks and weeks to get himself fit. When he eventually got fit, he played a couple of times and did okay in a weakened team that we put out. But that was the sum total of his involvement.
Scored a try.
Yeah, he fell over the line, didn't he, from a lovely pass that...
But he does that. He did that at Penrith as well. He used to love falling over the line like James Graham does. I got a funny one on this because I've heard different stories. There's a journalist I know at Fox Sport here in Sydney who told me basically that Lalani Latu's agent rang him up and had a right go at him after he put a press statement out based on the fact that, you know, he'd only played a certain amount of games. And the journalist was only stating facts. It's true. So I think they feel he's a little bit hard done by. Also had someone send me an email that knows Leilani Latu and said that he was fit. He was as fit as a butcher's dog when he arrived at Warrington. And this, it was a bit of a fallacy that he wasn't fit. So if that is true, then that sort of puts into question, well, they were waiting for him to get fit. You know, he couldn't play any games. He was rolling around in the dog shit at Victoria Park. That doesn't make sense. So I just don't know what the truth is about this. I'm told he's a really nice guy. He's articulate. He's intelligent.
We must reiterate on a few occasions when we're talking about these guys, we're not talking about whether they're decent people or not. I think we need to make that clear because it's a fine line, isn't it, between giving abuse and giving an opinion. And so we're not saying that he's not a decent fella, just...
At what point are we ever going to discuss that, though, on this podcast? That's just absolute nonsense. I think we're only ever going to judge anyone on the fact that they're a rugby league player. At the end of the day...
Or their Instagram account.
But then, he did actually stand out in that Salford match where there was a load of, like, second-rate players and stuff like that. That was the only time he actually stood out. Other than that, he didn't really look that fit, or it's either he's not really that powerful enough to make an impression. So I go back to my statement, is the fact is that there's a lot of fringe players who, for one reason or another, didn't quite make it. And I'm pointing my finger at the coaching staff.
Yeah, good point. Okay, 16th of February, as predicted by Madam Boyd, nearly a month earlier, Jack Hughes is announced by the club as Warrington's captain for 2021. We'll come on to Jack Hughes in the squad, so we'll just leave off that for a second. And then on the 17th of February, Steve Price tells the Warrington supporters he will be leaving as coach of the Wolves come the end of the season. We've kind of just touched on the coach, so we may as well go down through the path of the coach. We had three very articulate people that spoke very highly of their suggestions in terms of Steve Price and where they thought it all lay with this decision. I'll start by saying I think this is just it's not a story. There's no way that anyone could rightly believe that Steve Price was going to get a fifth year at Warrington. Based on the style of rugby league we're playing and the fact we were going to have to try and put people back on seats in 2022, it would have been a very, very funny decision had Warrington said, you know what, Steve, here's another three-year contract. That's not based on the fact whether he was doing a good job or a bad job. There just comes a time where you need to add a little bit of zest into a club. So I think it's a non-event. He was always going to go. I only think this does is he just protects Steve Price. He comes back to Australia. He goes for a job. And the club says, why did you leave Warrington? And he says, well, I left because I wanted to leave. Whereas if we'd left it till the end of the season and he goes to a job, interview in Australia, and they say, well, why did you leave Warrington? And he says, well, they didn't want me to stay. It comes over completely different. It's a tarnished resume. So I think this is the only reason this happened, really. It was just to keep everyone happy. He was never going to stay. As Richie Mathers pointed out, he was probably told that, really, in his ear, we're not going to give you a fifth year anyway, Steve. So this is the easiest for everyone. And it also is brilliant because now a new coach, and we think it's Shane Wayne. We're pretty sure it's Shane Wayne through Madam Boyd that he will be announced in the next month or so. It's now got someone sitting in the stand or watching the game back on TV, knowing full well that he can now start looking at a squad for next year, and it puts the players on edge. So I just think this is a non-event. He was never staying, and they've just brought it out early.
Mm.
Okay, 25th of February, Wire informed that their young standoff Riley Dean will spend the season out on loan at York City Knights, with Warrington having the option to recall him back to the HJ with 2 weeks' notice. I think this is great, Sam. I think, you know, as you've just mentioned before, all these players we don't get to see, you may as well put them out on loan with a recall.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. You mentioned a phrase with Gold Coast, York City Knights are a club on the up, and he'll be playing at the top end of the Championship as a young lad. Great deal. And we, if we ran into serious injury problems, we can have him back in 2 weeks.
So, it's that time of the year again. Expectations and excitement are high because a new season is just around the corner. What should Warrington's aims be for 2021? Well, to start with, as with any campaign, the main aim should be to improve on the previous season's performance. Warrington finished third and didn't make either final in 2020, so the club and the team should be looking to better that. It will be a tall order to make a top two finish though, with both St Helens and Wigan recruiting extremely strongly, and the likes of Hull FC, Huddersfield, Leeds, Castleford and Salford looking much better too. With that in mind then, it is likely to be more of a battle for the playoff places than the top two spots. Of course, as we know, this is Steve Price's last year as coach at the club, and he will surely be desperate to win that elusive grand final for the Warrington Wolves. But the big question really is if Wyatt have got the quality in both coach and squad to get there. It may be then that the one-off nature of the Challenge Cup once again represents Wyatt's best chance of a trophy, but I do think everyone would swap Wembley success for an elusive Old Trafford win. My other off-the-pitch hope for 2021 is that much of the year is actually spent focusing on 2022. The club need to secure a new coach and need to be very careful and thorough with their selection process. There is also a lot of work to be done with regards to the squad. I think most people, including myself, were hoping for more radical changes to the squad this off-season, but that hasn't happened, with just three signings made so far. However, with 14 players out of contract at the end of this year, 2022 will surely see a major overhaul with both ins and outs. I'd like to think that a new coach will be in place to make decisions on these outgoings and incomings. In many ways then, 2021 is a bit of a free hit for Wire, as anything that is won or achieved this season will be seen as a bonus in my opinion, with the attentions of many already turning to 2022 and the new era. Of course, one of the biggest hopes for this season is that we are able to have capacity crowds back at the HJ and other rugby league grounds during the course of this season, so we can get back to enjoying ourselves with hopefully an exciting and attractive brand of rugby league. Let's get started.
Well, there's Daniel. He's already looking towards 2022, Dennis.
He is, isn't he? I think he's basically saying that 2021 is going to be a transition year. He's looking forward to 2022. A couple of things that he started out with. He said he was going to be the excitement of this year. Well, that's unusual for Daniel if he's looking at that. But then, you know, he follows it up with about 10 caveats of like disappointment and things he's looking out for. I think one of the things is he'd like to see is like the coach appointed as soon as possible to take away that. And then also he points out that there's a lot of players coming off contract. So obviously the coach would be, you know, having an input into that, which is a fair point because, you know, what you don't want. And going back to your point, Rob, about Price going, it does clear that side of it up and it sets a proper transition so that you can deal with that side of it as a coach. He was expecting some radical change of the squad and that didn't happen. And, you know, usually associated with Warrington. I mean, we had the Greg Inglis bit, but we didn't really have too many other high profile signings. We, you know, we've more or less got the team that we had last year. And to be honest, there's nothing wrong with that. So I think the only thing is that with Daniel, he really does set the scene with his our only trophy opportunity is probably going to be Wembley, even though we all want the other one. But that's probably what our expectation is this year. So I think that's probably quite a good summary, really, off Daniel.
OK, well, let's move on to the Wire squad then for this year. It's made up of 30 players, of which 13 players come off contract at the end of 2021. That's 43.33% of the squad coming off contract at the end of the year. So if there are going to be any changes, it's going to be left for the coach and the CEO next year to decide. We'll start with the backs. We've broken them down into different categories. So we've got backs, halfbacks, hookers, props, back rowers, etc. The backs, as listed by their numbers, we go 1 Ratchford, 2 Lynham, 3 Inglis, 4 King, 5 Charnley, 17 Ashton, 18 Mamo, and then we've got the three young guys, 23 Josh Thulis, 27 Connor Wrench, and 28 Nathan Roebuck. I think that's quite an entertaining back line, Sam, looking at it. I think there's certainly room for who our best five will be there, with the likes of Ashton, Mamo, Thulis and Roebuck and Wrench coming through.
I agree. I think there's only really, personally, I think there's only a couple of choices for starting 13. We've only talked about the backs there, so give me a moment, because I know you're a big Ashton fan. But if we just put him to one side for a moment, if you looked at Ratchford, Lynham, Inglis, King and Charnley, there's strength, there's experience, there's speed, there's skill. Potentially that is a very, very exciting five. If you then add in, if you were to swap in Ashton and put Ratchford somewhere else, or if someone were to get injured and you put in Ashton or Mamo, there's pace to burn in your first two reserves. I think in terms of strike players, that's better than we've looked for years. On paper.
Right. Here's what I think. I'd like to know what your sort of wingers would be here, because I was looking at this and I was thinking, you know what? Inglis picks himself, and probably King does as well in the centres. But then when you look at the wingers, I'd like to see what they look like on the clock. You say that, Lynham and Charnley, they're a bit long in the tooth now, and I don't know how fast they would be over 100 metres, for instance, compared to Mamo and Ashton.
Yeah. Lynham's 28 and Charnley's 29. Mm. They're not as old as you think. They've been around for years, but they're not as old as you think.
No, but when you look at Ashton and Mamo, I think they've both shown that they're really quick. But I would throw a curveball in here as well, is that maybe I'd go for a mix. I would stick with Charnley based on like his experience and bringing the ball out from the line, which seems to be his only sort of thing that he gets to do nowadays. But I would drop Lynham. I think he really let the team down last year with his antics. And yes. I would bring in Nathan Roebuck. When I looked at the stats, he's 6'5" and he's 15 stone. He is the same height as Greg Inglis, although he's 9 kilos shy of Greg Inglis. And 9 kilos is the equivalent to a sausage dog, a car tyre, or actually the world's largest carrot, or a skeleton. So if we just got the skeleton of somebody else and tied that onto him, he would be another Greg Inglis. And I think he's played one game and scored one try. I think he's got quite a lot of speed, and that's what we need, is someone like that. He's my wild card this season. I would like to see him in the side.
He's your key to success, Dennis. Or skeleton key to success.
Yes, skeleton key to success.
I wrote that down as well when I was looking at it. I was surprised when I saw he was 6'5". I was really surprised. So I wrote that down as well, Dennis. And I think you're right. I do think, and we'll cross over to our CEO, I do think Josh
Thulis
is ahead of him in the pecking order. Is ahead of him in the pecking order, or at least from what we've seen before. But those two young lads, from what we have, from what little we've seen, both equipped themselves well and add a bit of excitement to what we've got coming through. I'm not so sure he'll go with it early doors.
Well, no, he won't.
I don't think he will. I think we're all going to be looking at it and thinking, oh, here we go again. For me, there's only one fullback in the club, and that's Matty Ashton. I would definitely move Matty Ashton. I'm in line with exactly what Tony Barrow said on the podcast at Christmas. Ratchford would make a brilliant loose forward. Tony Barrow also said it would actually increase his longevity as a player to go to loose forward and to carry on at fullback. So for me, Ashton has to go at fullback. The big worry I have about them putting Ashton on the wing is having watched 25 minutes of the Hull versus Warrington quarter-final, Ashton was used as a battering ram, an absolute battering ram coming off his own line. He was black and blue. He was getting pushed back. He's not a Charnley or a Lynham. And if that's the way Price is using his wingers, which we know he does, and Dave Birch mentioned this on the podcast as well, stop using them as battering rams and start throwing the ball to them. So things may change when the new coach comes in. But for me, I like that back line. I think there's not one player in that back line that I want to get rid of. I think there's excitement in the three younger kids coming through, and it'll be intriguing to see. My only grey mark across them all is exactly what Dennis has said, and that is Lynham getting 8 weeks for handling someone's bollocks. You know, if I'm at work and Dave gets called into HR because he's been over by the photocopier, and HR say to him, "Look, you seem to have grappled Bruce's bollocks when you were overchanging from A4 to A3 paper. It was clearly seen. Oh, I didn't mean to do it." Lynham knew what he was doing. I think one of the old Warrington players was on Twitter saying he'd played enough rugby league to know when you're holding bollocks or not. The whole thing was bollocks. So for me, he's the one that's got to come under question. And I think Inglis will keep in line.
I think what that made that... I think what that... Oh, God, I can't even fucking speak. I think...
Who's got hold of your bollocks?
I know. I think what made it worse was the fact that it followed the Makinson incident only a number of weeks before. And it was a case of you get one of them every few years, but then a couple of bollocks every week, it's not on.
Josh Charnley carried the ball more than any other Warrington player last year. And the majority of that was in his own half, out from dummy half, moving the ball away from the line.
How do you think Brian Bevan would have gone under the coaching of Steve Price?
Fucking hell. He probably would have gone back to Australia.
Okay, move on to the halfback, Sam. We've got three that are in there. I think there's a few others that could obviously fall in. Ratchford, Thulis could probably play in the halves as well. But we've got three downers. Austin, number 6. 7, Widdop, who has come back. He's back in the game. And we've got 24, Riley Dean, who we spoke about, who's headed off to York. What do we make of these three boys? I mean, Sam, what do we make of Austin and Widdop? We want more out of them this year than last year, don't we?
We want more out of them, but I'm really, really positive this year. We've heard on the grapevine that Gareth Widdop is far more settled this year than last. We won't go into the detail, but he had some family issues that he had to deal with. He's come back. He knows where he is. His head's clear. I'm expecting a lot more from him. We saw some glimpses last year, but we just saw glimpses, didn't we? And Blake, again, another one. I know you feel, Rob, he goes missing a bit in the big games. I don't disagree with that. Maybe missing is the wrong word, but we want him to stamp his authority on a big game rather than just be a part of the team. I just feel he's also settled, and he's not... I'm not seeing any of his posts saying, "Wish I was back in Oz today," like he was. I just feel the two of them, and with the arrival of Greg Inglis, that might take a little bit of pressure off them because they're not necessarily going to have the spotlight all on them. I feel good about that. And the first reserve, Riley Dean's gone to York, the first reserve is Ratchford. And Ratchford can fit into either position almost seamlessly. We've got great cover there.
Dennis, we spoke about watching Widdop and just sort of his zonal play, that he's right out there on that left edge. At times he looks a little bit boxed up there with Curry and you know, and King. It all gets a little bit boxed in that corner. I suggested to you possibly that we need to see him coming a bit more in field and letting him have a little bit more say in where he stands, because I just think Widdop is too zonal in comparison to the way he played at the Dragons.
This is it, isn't it? I mean, again, we've got this situation where when we watch Warrington week in, week out, we've got Blake Austin on one side, we've got Gareth Widdop on the other. When you look at halfbacks in general, they basically switch here, switch there, they understand where they're going to be, etc. And actually, good halfbacks usually work the way, you know, make the career for themselves by having that intuition and working with other players on the pitch. Now, that's not saying that, you know, these players haven't got that capability, but again, coaching-wise, it seems to me that they're being told structure. To play this way.
We seem to have a structure, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. I think we need to just let that go. And this is the worrying thing for me this year. I know that, you know, we've talked about Price and, you know, it all makes sense now and it's a non-story and we've got this transition. But if he really thinks that all those things that we're pointing out, what happened last year, is going to employ them this year, then we're just going to see the same thing. So it really does need to be different if he really thinks that we're going to get somewhere. Because the players last year dragged us through in a few games. We got victories. I think that was basically because we deviated from what he was probably advocating sometimes. Rob, I mean, you're a big fan of Austin, I know, but, you know, and I don't want you to go off and talk about him for another 10 minutes. But, you know, these guys on paper, you know, like Basildon Bond or whatever it is, you know, that really quality paper. Describing them as a paper from toilet paper, tissue paper, A4, just standard paper to the Bond paper. How do you see where they would be on that scale this year?
Well, if you think back to the Egyptians who used to use papyrus, I have a funny feeling that they're being stapled down by papyrus with antiquated tactics of you know, playing a certain way. They're almost graph paper in the fact that they have to stay within their own little squares.
Excellent.
And I want to see a fluid artist sort of, I don't know what kind of paper that would be, but a real high-end paper that is abstract and lets them put sort of something down on paper that's a landscape of moving across the field.
That's excellent.
I've had three coffees. Okay, haven't got much to say about these two hookers. We've got 9 Darryl Clark and 16 Danny Walker. I think really, if we're going to put a watermark through a piece of paper, these two are the watermark. We know exactly what they are. We know what Darryl Clark's all about. I think we realise what Danny Walker's become. You got anything to add on that, Sam?
Not really. Other than just to point out that Danny Walker is still surprisingly young. You know, he's still only 21. And maybe because we've seen him play so much, we think he's a seasoned veteran. Still a young lad. So, again, as a backup, very happy. But let's face it, Darryl Clark's going to play 70 minutes most weeks, isn't he? Maybe 80.
Is it me or have other clubs got number nines that have a kicking game?
Yes. Some of them do. Some of them.
We haven't, have we?
No. Absolutely. Absolutely not.
Right, let's move on to the props, and this could take half an hour. We've got 8 Hill, 10 Cooper, 13 Philbin, 19 Robbie Mulhern, 20 Akawala and 21 Rob Butler. I think Sam's already spoken about this before, that the three that have come in are better than the ones that have gone out. And I'm just hoping that between Robbie Mulhern and Rob Butler, we get a decent player. Just one of them would do, wouldn't it? Because we've not had that for the last few years.
I think those three are fighting for two places on the bench. Mulhern, Akawala and Butler are fighting. Between the three of them, are fighting for two places on the bench.
All right. We won't talk about Hughes yet being the new captain, but we will talk about Hill not being the captain. I think this is a great improvement on the team this year. I think it gives Hill the option, Dennis, just to focus on being a prop. I watched him in that Warrington Hull game. He's exhausted talking to Childs. He's constantly talking to him and running back into him. He can't get his breath.
Well, it's a suggestion that he's probably not going to be on the pitch as much as well then, isn't it? I mean, I think he's got to that stage of his career where they can sort of like plan out and say, look, you know, you're not going to play as many minutes. We're going to rotate you. So you give it your all on the minutes you're in on there. And as you say, you just focus on your game rather than anything else. So, yeah, I think it's a good move.
Is what it is. Okay, back rowers. We've got 11 Curry, 12 Hughes. I've got 13 Philbin. I've written him down in two areas here, which probably sort of is a little bit confusing as to terms of where they're going to play him this year. 14 Jason Clark, 15 Davis, 22 Ellis Robson, 25 Doro, 26 Longstaff, and 29 a player that I don't think was in the squad last year, Sam, at the top level, and that's Jacob Gannon. A question whether Curry and Hughes are the two players they were of 5 years ago. But Hughes now with a full pre-season, hopefully he's got over all these little injuries and niggles, and the fact he's been given the captaincy too, might just make him a better proposition than he was the last 12 months.
Don't disagree. I think both of them, I alluded to a little earlier, both of them have had injury issues. Curry's now had a full season free of issues. And as you've just said, Hughes has had a full pre-season. So again, I think he's going to be looking for these two to play most of the minutes every game to enable him to rotate his prop forwards and his loose forward around. And look, let's face it, they're both players that when they're playing well, you expect to get an 8 out of 10 from them every week because they're consistent and they're good. But that's what we need if we're going to be... We need them both to be firing if we're going to be up there near the top of the league.
All right, I've done some research here anyway. I've looked right across, gone on the Warrington Wolves website, and I've identified, apart from Jacob Gannon, I'm not going to count him, that everyone's got a personal sponsor apart from Jason Clark. So yeah. I think we should address this. I think, Rob, I think we should be contacting him, and we're willing to sponsor Jason Clark from the podcast. I think we're going to offer him raising his profile. I want you to become his agent. We're going to raise his profile. We're going to include him in the art club, put his face on a very painting.
I miss the art club. I miss the art club. Facebook really misses the art club. Yeah.
we're going to offer him the option of taking up a clothes offer through Rob's new job, and he can choose a fashion range of his choice in one of Rob's many worldwide shops. I think that's offering from what would Brian Bevan say for Jason Clark.
Very good, Dennis. I think, I mean, he's there, isn't he, as Greg Inglis's carer, almost. I think that's kind of the way it needs. Yeah. Sam's holding up a sign that says £250. I'm not sure what he's going on about there. But
I think we could get his sponsor. If he's got no one away, I think we could get his sponsorship for £250.
Okay.
Well, look, if he is there as a carer for Greg Inglis, I thought possibly he could be sort of... He's not a butler, is he? I think he's more of a concierge. I think he's top end with him coming from Australia. So this week I contacted the CWA, the Concierge Worldwide Association. Mm. I just asked what's needed behind a concierge. Apparently there's four qualities that every concierge must have. It's called the art of service. The titles are this: willingness, adjust, needs, and kindness are the four that you need to be a concierge. I've got a few examples. They wrote back to me. I told them about the situation and what's needed, and they very kindly put something together for me. So they said, willingness. Jason should act as a great artist when it comes to getting things done. Jason should be like a magician. What Greg wants, Greg should get. Willingness is a deep-seated desire and a passion of meeting Greg's needs.
Right. So. Okay.
Interesting. Adjust. Jason needs to adjust to an unrelenting dedication to making things happen for Greg, whether or not the odds are in his favour. If Greg wants a cardboard to be removed from outside his bungalow because he didn't place it appropriately within the recycle bin for Warrington Borough Council and they refuse it to take it away, It falls outside their remit. Jason must get on to this. If Greg wants a fish supper from the Big Blue or just wants front row tickets for a Rick Astley gig, the concierge, Jason Clark par excellence, should make this happen. Needs, and they're giving a really good example here. Jason makes Greg a cheeseburger. Greg eats it and says, "Your cheeseburgers are really great, Jason. I want to send one to my dad, who lives in Australia. Oh, and I want it to arrive hot." To which Jason should reply, yes. "Jason, would you like that with cheddar or blue cheese, Greg?"
Interesting. Excellent.
Yeah. And the final one is kindness. Greg hits his head on a low-hanging light fitting in his bungalow. Yes. Should Jason, A, tell Greg to suck it up because he's far too busy watching Tipping Point? B, suggest he gets in touch with Dave Birch at Warrington Hospital Radio for a protective headband? Or C, immediately apply ice to Greg's head, turn off the power at the bungalow's fuse box and ring a reasonably priced electrical firm, RH Thompson, and ask to speak to Neil Burnt, their head technician, to install a flush halogen ceiling light fitting? The correct answer was actually B, ring Dave Birch.
I was going to say B, yeah.
I think we've covered that off. Right, okay, let's move on to the coaching staff. We've got three. We've got Steve Price as head coach, and then we've got his two assistants in Lee Breers and Andrew Henderson. Sam, I'll let you go down this clusterfuck. Tell me what you think of this.
I don't know what there is to say, really. I've got a lot of time for all three of those people, and I will be supporting them to the hill to hopefully bring us something, some success this year. I think the question mark we've had is over the way the team has entered the playoffs in the last 2 years. We said it a couple of weeks ago on the Brexit discussion. We've entered the playoffs with a whimper. This year, I want us to enter the playoffs actually with a genuine chance to win the thing. I am bothered whether we don't win it. Of course I'm bothered whether we don't win it. But I want us to go in with me thinking we can win this, whereas the last 2 years I've gone in thinking, well, this ain't going to happen because we're playing crap. And that's the job of the three coaches to get us there in September going into October.
He is given.
Dennis is frowning. He's got his head in his hands now.
He's just skirted round that, hasn't he?
I've not.
Yeah, you have.
We've failed.
Terrible. You know, the fans in the last two years. Now will be going, oh, he's look at him. He's doing it again. That politician there on that podcast.
No, we failed in the last 2 years to finish the season well. So the challenge for these three is to get us to finish the season well, not start it well, play a bit well in the middle, but actually to be finishing it well. That's their challenge.
I wish you'd stop clicking that pen, Dennis, every 5 seconds. He's click, 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 click. I do apologise to the listeners. He's going to put it down.
It's nervous because I've been putting him under pressure, you see. That's
I know,
you
put him under pressure and the pen went...
Now, listen, I'm not a fan. I think he's we discussed this. He's had his chance, and I don't think that prolonging the agony is going to do us any good. I really don't think he'll be able to motivate the players. I think they've had a falling out behind the scenes. I think this is probably one of the reasons why he's going, and they've had to announce early to keep everybody
in line.
A mutiny, Dennis. Exactly. And I think we need a change. And I think rather than like it all petering out at the end, I would rather just sort of say, right, you know what? Yeah, Easter, away you go. Rob?
Yeah, well, I'd be really hypocritical. I mean, I've listened back to the podcast from last year towards the end, and I don't want to do a Sam and completely do a 360. We can put some of what he said in the last podcast in here at this point, probably, of course. But I can't go back on what I've said last year. I've had enough of Steve Price. I'm sure he's a lovely bloke, but we don't want a community officer in charge at Warrington. We want a coach that can win a Super League. And I've said it before, why on earth they got him to sign that extra contract when they did after the Challenge Cup? Because it all went tits up after that. And the last 2 years, based on Simon Moran's money and the other board members and what we've put out on the park, and what saved him last year was COVID And also what saved him is the fact that they're living in a bubble at the moment, that they're ignoring social media, because the comments on social media towards the end last year, that's what the voice of the crowd would have been. There would have been a lot of people leaving that stand towards the end of last year, and they would have realised and thought, oh, this isn't good for season ticket sales. So I really hope he proves me wrong, and as Sam said, we get behind him and he goes on this brilliant run of victories. But to me, I've seen enough of Price and his tactics to think it would almost be a blessing in disguise after five games if we've lost four and we can just get excited again because a new coach comes in early. That's really where I'm at. But it should be... Didn't Wakefield score more points than us last year? I think Sam pointed that out at the end of last year.
Yeah.
That is unacceptable.
Wakefield didn't, but I have actually looked at that. Let's do the positive first. Points against, we were the second best team in the league. We conceded 204 points. Saints conceded 199. The next best, with a full complement of games, were Wigan at 280. So defensively, fine. But in attack, we were only the sixth best with 365 points. And Catalan, who only played 13 games, that was four less than us, outscored us. And that's where it is. We need to be scoring more points. Simple.
I can't believe there haven't been people knocking on, and I don't know, but I just can't believe there haven't been people knocking on Carl Fitzpatrick's door telling him that's the way it is. I just can't believe that. I can't comprehend that with some of the talent that we've got behind the scenes at Warrington, that hasn't been brought to his attention, or it hasn't been brought up at a board meeting to say, these are the stats.
Yeah,
they're either burying their head in the sand, or they realise it and there's going to be a change.
Mm. Well, Carl Fitzpatrick's under pressure, isn't he? So that's what I think.
Well, we'll set off on another voyage and see what happens.
And time now for a new show here on BBC Two, a nautical tale entitled Mutiny on the HJ. Yes, an epic voyage with Admiral Rimmer and Captain Price with his Players Group crew as they endeavour to sail down the River Mersey before encompassing the treacherous Manchester Ship Canal and dropping anchor at Salford Quays on the hunt for treasure at Old Trafford. I have to add, my last seafaring cruise was to the beautiful island of Mauritius, an island once famous for the peculiar-looking bird, the dodo, sadly before its extinction. Come to think of it, the tactics currently on show at the Halliwell Jones are about as dead as a fucking dodo.
Oh, Captain Stevie, darling, I can't wait to set sail for the treasure at Old Trafford. Just smell that beautiful, sweet sea air.
Oh, I think it's the Sipesuds from Crossfields, Admiral Rolfe.
Nonsense, Stevie. If that was the case, why are there so many seagulls? And doesn't the boat look magnificent? I think the mermaid on the bow of the ship is absolutely splendid, Stevie. Is it sculpted on anyone in particular?
Oh, I had it commissioned on the Vaudal Statistics of Jenna Brooks.
Oh, and is it to scale, Stevie?
Nah. It's a 3-to-1 bitch ratio.
Oh, excellent. Oh, well, that'll be sure to pull off any co-anchor. Now, how are your seafaring legs, Stevie? The water can get quite choppy navigating the weir at Victoria Park.
I've taken my seasick pills, Rolfie. Otherwise, I'm about as stable as Bevan French under a high ball.
Well, I'm sure it won't be the only bitter pill you swallow this season. Oh, Oh, who's that man vomiting over the right-hand side of the boat?
Oh, that's the Marquis Inglis. He hasn't quite found his feet yet under the five drives and a kick navigation.
Yes, I expect he's starboard. Right, now have your men started loading the rations into the galley. And tell Master Seaman Blake he can't bring all those flakes, otherwise we'll start to list.
Oh, I didn't realise he had a speech impediment.
Oh, yes, my next order. If you could tell Master Toby King up there in the crow's nest, if he does catch sight of land, he must come down on his tiptoes. His flat-footedness completely fucked up the rigging on his last ascent.
I'll make sure he uses the mast ladder.
Yes, with you at the wheel, Stevie, it'll be the only ladder he gets to the top of on your Super League voyage.
Ah, where's the deckhand Patton got to? I told him to be on standby in case First Mate Widdop jumped ship.
More like a sinking ship.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I've sent him below deck to make sure the portholes are secure.
Yes, they've been quite leaky on the HJ down to port side.
I've told him to, Rolfie, to check on Commodore Fitzpatrick. You know, make sure he's brought his life jacket.
I wouldn't worry about it, Stevie. He's so caught up in his marketing bubbles, he's bound to float.
Anyway, Rolfie, I've told Dick I'm going to dispatch him in a submarine and send him on ahead to Salford Quays.
Aye, aye, Stevie, and make sure his periscope's working.
Don't worry, Rolfie. I've pinned a picture of Daniel Arnold's legs to his sonic radar.
Oh, well done, Stevie. He's bound to shoot his torpedo all over that. Oh, and excellent work, by the way, by enlisting that new crew member, Molly Hearn. What with him being vegan and all, that's one less person on board that won't be suffering from scurvy.
No, don't worry, Rolfie, there's Buckley's chance of that. I've already had one outbreak following the crew hanging out at Benny Westwood's food emporium.
Now, what time are we setting sail, Stevie? We don't want to miss that prevailing northwesterly. Fetch our koala to raise the spinnaker.
Are you sure, Rolfie? Three gusts of winds and he runs out of puff.
Oh, well, chuck the oars at Kabula and Latu until at least we've reached Bridgefoot.
Oh, but they can't even sail a fucking pedalo.
Now, Captain Price, if your crew is to find the Old Trafford treasure, you must invest in the entire player crew. Have you been practising the sea shanty?
Oh, gee, I've tried, Rolfie, but it's very hard to find a decent tenor when they're all in Jason Clark's bank account.
Anyway, round up the crew, Stevie. This tide won't wait much longer.
Oh, good day, Master Hill. Untie the ship and cast us adrift.
Jesus Christ, these knots are tighter than a Super League marketing budget. Oh, we'll play havoc with me fucking arthritis. We need smaller fingers. Quick, quick, fetch me the ship's monkey.
Oh, that's no way to talk about, Stevie.
Besides, we're not going anywhere in a hurry, lads. We seem to have caught Moby Dick in the netting.
No. It's just Professor Broomhead. He fell off the jetty. Oh, he's well and truly caught up in the fishing tackle, Rolfie.
Oh, tackle sacks.
Shall I send for the young able sea wank Lynham?
Oh, yes. If there's anyone that can handle fishy bollicky tackle, it's Seaman Thomas.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward in future to highlights of passing the Penny Ferry, maybe Thelwall Viaduct, Earlham Locks, and for the eventual arrival at Salford Basin, and maybe taking a show in at the Lowry Theatre before crossing to Old Trafford. I think that's the journey I'm hoping we're going to see.
Oh dear, that's a shame. I've got a feeling it's going to go the other way. When are we getting Ralph Rimmer on?
Well, I'll sort that out. I'll sort it
I'm
out.
I'm going to
Dennis.
Ask you every week.
We've got 32 podcasts coming up, apart from the special we're having with Ralph Rimmer and the one with Andrew Johns that Madam Boyd's working on. Okay. So, Watch this space. Watch this space. Okay, it's time to move on to the panel's top eight. This is the Watt Bevan panel's prediction, also known as the Classification Universal Numerical Tariff Society.
Well, we've had a few members. Sorry. I'm sick of this. I do understand, but the Classification Universal Numerical Tariff Society. I thought we were going to clean this up. I'm not happy. Can we not do what we agreed, change that completely, and instead of being tariff, it's target?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Right. So, yeah. Right, we've got 16 members on the panel now, on the tariff panel. That includes myself, Sam Dennis, Dave Birch over at Warrington Hospital Radio, young blogger Daniel, Alfie Garnett, I think he's in Cork or somewhere in Ireland, I can't remember, Fingal's Cave or somewhere, Lee in Dubai, Gareth Monkey, north of the river, Mike Brown, south of the river by 240 miles, Daniel Murphy, north of the river, 96-year-old Alan London, now vaccinated and back at the pie shop, Dave Munro at Middle Earth, Alan Brady, north of the river, Dan Lewis, north of the river, Mike Carter has also joined. He's in Melbourne, Australia. And then to bring in the Asian market, we've brought on young Richard Shaw, who lives in Korea, South Korea, lads.
Excellent.
So now, what I asked you all to do was to come up with your top eight. At the time, Fuckwit here thought it was going to be a top eight playoff, but clearly it's not. It's a top six playoff. So I got that wrong. So I asked everyone to put in order their top eight of who they believed would finish the regular season at the top and who would be all the way down at eighth position. I can just tell you that amongst 12 teams, there are 479,001,600 combinations of putting 12 teams in order. Yet, bizarrely, nine of the panel got within one of each other. So I'm not sure what that says about
league.
Super League. To just sort of put that comparison to the 479 million, the chances of getting a hole in one as an amateur are 12,500 to 1. If you're a good golfer with a handicap of less than 3, it's 5,000 to 1. And a PGA player, it's 2,500 to 1. Although Tiger Woods has only ever hit 3 holes in one,
and had 2 car crashes, so he's nearly level with that.
Probably going to be off the disability Tino, isn't he, going forward. But anyway, okay, right now, everyone was in agreement who was going to finish top. Everyone went for. There's only 2 teams that everyone went for. Everyone went for Saints to finish top, apart from 6 people who went for Wigan. Daniel, Gareth Monkey, Daniel Murphy, Dave Munro, Alan Brady and Dan Lewis all went for Wigan. We will be reading their full addresses out at the end of the podcast, so you can pop round and put a little bit of dog shit through the letterboxes. So that's all good. Everyone else went for St Helens. Everyone went for the same 8 teams, apart from 4 people who managed to squeeze Salford in there. No. There was only 4. There was no points whatsoever. No one believes Hawkeye, Lee or Wakefield will get into the top 8. So, reading them back, the 2 teams that will just finish outside the playoffs, based on the panel's points, Catalans are in 8th. They managed 29 points amongst the panel. In 7th position was Castleford on 32 points. Mm. In 6th position, we went for Hull on 53 points. In 5th position, Huddersfield on 56. In 4th, Leeds on 77. 3rd, Warrington on 84. And then there was a big jump to Wigan on 117. And at the top, we believe Saints will finish top of the regular season. They got 122 points. amongst the panel, which means Saints and Wigan will go directly into the semi-final, and yet again, Wyre will play Hull at the Halliwell Jones in the quarter-final.
So we don't need to play 30, we don't need to play 20-odd games, and we can just jump straight through to the playoffs.
It'll be interesting to see how close we are. I mean, the one that fluctuated the most really was one person. Mike Carter put Leeds in second. He was the only person out of everyone that actually changed the top two from being Saints or Wigan in either way.
Where's Mike?
The two.
Where is he?
He's in Melbourne. He's in Melbourne.
He's going on past reputations of Leeds.
He just used to live in North Latchford, which apparently is Grappenhall. I was told so. And the two lowest ones were that gave Warrington down in fifth position. Two was Dennis, and also Mike Carter. You were both in agreement that you'd finish.
Yeah.
And for Gareth Monkey, had Salford in seventh position. That was the highest Salford got. So
it's time now for Fails or the Unexpected.
A wise man believes only in lies, trusts only in the absurd, and learns to expect the unexpected.
I personally think this story is funny. But if your sense of humour doesn't happen to be the same as mine, then I'm afraid you're going to be a bit disturbed by what goes on.
Well, following the success of Tackle Bags over recent years, I've been contracted by the podcast to come up with a new topic to discuss on a weekly basis. Now, this section on the podcast called Fails and the Unexpected is a weekly analysis of the failures and unexpected events of the week in rugby league. Now, I will be using our fan base to identify what they feel were the most significant fails and unexpected events of the week. And I'll be presenting the fails and unexpected points to the What Bevin team here to discuss and decide what was the most influential factor of the week. Now, this could be something that happened in the Warrington match. For instance, like Steve Price playing everyone on the bench, which would be unexpected. Or a failure such as Tommy Lydon fondling the bollocks of an opposition player, leading to him being sent off. It could be, of course, elsewhere in rugby league, such as the massive fail of the Super League CEO, or often referred to, cunt executive officer, Robert Elston, who has presided over the Super League, delivering a shitty pizza sponsorship deal and a no deal or reduced TV deal, and leaving the coffers of £750,000 hole in the accounts from his decision to sub out the evaluation of selling off the game of rugby league in the UK. So I thought that was the point. It could also be unexpected elsewhere, such as a story about John Bateman, for instance, who has been given the key to the town of Wigan, and more notably, his recent acceptance as membership at Mensa. So there you go. Oh, sorry, that's actually a typo. It should actually be Mesna, which is Mesna's convenience store, 2931 Mesna's Road, Wigan, WN12DG. And in fact, that was unexpected. I went on actually to look at the Google reviews of that particular shop that John is now a member at. And really interesting reviews. It's only got one star out of five for this shop in Wigan. Vicky Donnellan, she said, my son went in for two bottles of Coke and two packets of crisps. So it must have been Sunday lunch there in Wigan. He bought these, clearly stated on the shelf, for £1 each. However, he was charged £6, £2 over the cost. I understand that he does this quite often with the younger children, referring to the guy there. No receipt given, and then the Coke was a month out of date and was flat. So she wasn't happy. There's another one on there. Mr. Joey Batwheel. He's put, don't ever use this shop. The shopkeeper is really offensive. He swears at minors for nothing. He always shortchanges vulnerable elderly people and young kids. I bought a 75p Coke, gave him a £2 coin, and he gave me 40p change. I told him about it, and he told me to fuck off. What an awful man. These are genuine. You go onto Google reviews and read them about the shop. The final one, Jack McCready. The owner is a scruffy individual who has the attitude of a melted welly. Customer service is what keeps you in business. Learn how to speak to customers. P.S. Stop trying to sell rotten fruit. They're absolutely genuine. Anyway, listen. What is Mensa? Anyway, all right. Mensa is the world's oldest, most famous IQ society. What does it mean? Does anybody know what it means? Mensa?
I don't know.
No.
It's not actually...
It's an acronym, is it?
It's not an acronym, interestingly enough. It's actually Latin for table. So have to have a look at that.
Put your cards on the table.
And what's Mensa for? Well, I'll tell you. Mensa is a society for like-minded people. It aims to identify and foster human intelligence for the benefit of humanity, to encourage research in nature, characteristics and the uses of intelligence, and to provide a stimulating intellectual and social environment for its members. Now, what rugby league connections can we think of that are associated with Mensa? I looked and I spent hours and
hours. Glad you did.
Yes. And the only thing I could come up with was Lucas Mensa, an Argentinian rugby union player. And I thought, this isn't good. This is not good, guys. So,
no, it's not.
There is a shortage of members in the rugby league community that are members of Mensa. There isn't anybody. So I thought that we at the What Bevin podcast should change that with a challenge that the What Would Brian Bevin team to become the first Rugby League All Mensa Members podcast.
Oh, I like it, yes. Dennis.
With the help of my section every week and the educational content of the podcast, we're aiming to improve our IQ over the course of the season. So we will be taking the Mensa test online to see what our score will be and whether we qualify. Oh, and excellent. Then take the test at the end of the season to see if we can qualify for membership. And what
brilliant.
We're going to do is invite other members of our podcast and our fans to join in with this exercise. And what I'd like to do is really sort of, help with that education with my new section of Fails and the Unexpected and everything else in the podcast to help you get through and become a member of Mensa by the end of the season.
Oh, brilliant, Dennis. Absolutely. I was about to say, better the devil you know with tackle bags, but I'm looking forward to this now.
Thank you.
I think it's an excellent section. Will we be advertising this on our Facebook page?
Possibly not. I'll have to look into that. I'll see if I can dumb that down a little and we can come up with another one. Maybe Fensa. Just lower the fence a little bit more.
Fensa, isn't Fensa Fenstration Windows? I think, isn't it? I'm pretty sure it is. Fenestration. Anyway, I've got a question. Going back to the start of the podcast.
Is it an IQ
How
one?
Would... Well, sort of. How would you classify Rob's dictators section? Would it be a fail or would it be unexpected?
Interesting. Yes. Well, certainly unexpected. Whether it was a fail or not is how many listeners we lose over the course of the next few weeks.
Predictions.
We can predict the future. Or resist the inevitable urge to try.
Good afternoon to you. Earlier on today, apparently, a woman rang the BBC and said she heard that there was a hurricane on the way. Well, if you're watching, don't worry, there isn't.
I'll predict Warrington, but can I do it with a caveat, please?
Okay, it's on to predictions. Oh, gee, I've been waiting for this for a long, long time, boys, but it's finally here. On Sunday, the 25th of March, at 2:45 p.m. at the ground of Headingley, Castleford take on the Warrington Wolves. I'll start with you, Sam. What's your prediction?
A win. We're going to start with two wins, and this will be the first of them. And Castleford 16. Castleford 16. Warrington Wolves 28. Easy.
Now, little rumour, is Greg Inglis going to play?
No idea.
Okay.
Oh, come on. Where's this come from?
I just think young Gregory Inglis might not play in that first game.
Really?
Well, the only reason I'm saying this, and this is what's quite confusing, is over the last few weeks on Twitter, on Instagram, etc., Warrington Wolves have run no footage of Inglis running the ball.
Mm.
And I'm just wondering if Mr. Gregory Inglis is carrying a bit of a knock.
Dennis, tell Mr. London I need my balls back, won't you?
Oh, well, there she is, Madam Boy. What have you heard, Dennis? Yeah, what have you heard?
I have to agree. I think there's a bit of a twinge somewhere, and I don't think he's going to be playing. That's all I'm going to say about it. Listen, I've got Castleford 24, Warrington 10. I don't think we're going to win this first game. I've got a funny feeling it's going to be a tough one. What about you, Rob?
I don't know. What are we expecting? Who are we expecting to play fullback, Sam? Who do you think will play fullback? Ratchford?
Yeah. If Greg Inglis doesn't play, then I expect Ratchford will play centre and Ashton will play fullback.
Price, do you think Price will move Ratchford into... I mean, I always thought Ratchford was a better centre than any other position when he played at Salford.
Well, not just that. He played centre for us twice, and one in particular at St Helens at right centre, and set up two wonderful tries, but that was several years ago.
Yeah, OK. All right. Well, look, boys, I'm going to be positive whether Greg Inglis plays or not. As I said, I'm going to get behind Steve Price. So I'm going for a Warrington win. I think it will be close, but I think we'll probably win by about 6 points. So come on, The Wire. OK, that's it until the action starts again. So from our very own action man, yes, attired in his factual commando gear, it's an opposable rubber thumbs up from Sam.
All the best.
And forget Action Man, because this old lad's jumped through more hoops for the podcast than any action doll. It's an Eddie Kidd leap over 20 Wembley open-top buses wave from Dennis.
Passeio.
I'm Rob London, and my favourite action doll was Evel Knievel, as the sound of his motorbike would distract from the noise of me knocking one out from the box bedroom. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
Should have used a stretched Armstrong with that.
Jesus.
Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down.